Shabbos, Tilt will get the move. But, and even I think it's the book of Mukta, Halachas of Mukta, something like that. I wanted to bring it today. I thought I'd have it up in the sheet, but I couldn't have it in this marriage, so I don't have it with me. Anybody have it? Can I share? Anybody? Is that William? You get it? You can get it without too much of a hassle? Yeah? So bring it down. I don't mind. That'd be good. Let's get started. There are four major categories of mukta. The first is the worst. That's called mukta machmas gufa. It's intrinsically inherent in mukta. What does that mean? That has a basically negative definition. Negative definition means it's not one of three things. It's not a person. It's not a food. And it's not a utensil. Anything which is not a person, not a food, not a utensil, is muksa. What are examples of that? Sticks and stones and dirt. That's intrinsic muksa. The word that's used for it is commonly is muksa machmas gufo. Thank you very much. Its very essence is muksa. Appreciate it. Its very essence is muksa. It's intrinsically muksa. It's intrinsically mukta, and as such, you may not move it on Shabbos in the normal fashion. It's called mukta machmas gufa. To repeat, now, as we shall see, there may be certain ways in which we can undo the status. Let's give some other practical examples around the house in this category called Muksa Machmas Gufo. Let's say you have shells or peels which are completely useless. A person won't eat it, an animal won't eat it, it's not called food at all. That would be considered muksa machmas gufo. So too, it would seem, be in this category. Muksa machmas gufo. Believe it or not, even money might be in this category.
Money?
Yeah. Something that money is not the person, that's for sure. It's not food, that's for sure. It may not even consider it to be a kli, because it's not really a kli, it's not really a utensil or a vessel. And then for some say that it also has the status of muksa machmas gufo. It's a very sad case of muksa machmas gufo is a corpse, a mace, is also considered to be in this category of muksa machmas gufo. Things which break, something you have a broken glass, a glass breaks. Chair breaks. Whatever breaks, it's considered it's now just garbage. But once again, It has no use whatsoever. It would be considered to be in the category of muksa nachas gufa. So, those are examples. Remind me, if we should get later, to discuss a possibility of rendering muksa nachas gufa permissible. Abracadabra magic. Maybe it's the way how to do it. That's category number one. Category number two is something called Mukta Machmas Chisoron Kis. What does that mean? Mukta because it is, you literally lose money. Chisoron Kis means you lose your wallet, you lose your money. But that means it's something which is valuable. And because of its value, the owner typically would not allow it to be used for anything other than its intended use. And, of course, that intended use is prohibited on Shabbos. I said to exclude something such as a crystal decanter. Oh, very expensive. Well, how about some diamond jewels? Also very expensive. But they're intended to be used on Shabbos. It's permissible to use it on Shabbos, so they must not consider it to be in the category of mukta. However, if you have something such as a violin, perhaps today we talk about certain kinds of computers, CDs, cameras, expensive articles, which are used only for their intended use. You don't throw it around, you know, if there's something too sensitive and it's also expensive. And the main use is prohibited on Shabbos. That's what's called Muktza Machmas Chisoron Kis. This is category number two. Is there a way out of this category? We'll see. Back to that later also. Another quick slip. The condition. Okay, yes. On your table. Let's start with that first. Let's make it simple. You have artwork on the table. Let's say for argument, it is a work of art. A work of art, right? Gorgeous. And here it is. I want to move it on Shabbos. That's okay. But it's not. It's basically permissible to move it around. Its main use is not a prohibited one. And as such, it's permissible to move it around. You're asking a different question. What if you have a piece of art hanging on the wall? It's a different issue. There exists a potential category of books which may fit under this category, which is something which is expressed to take us to the Gemara. Yichei lo moko. In Hebrew words. Yichei lo moko means set aside in a place. It's possible that you set aside a particular place for something that it may not be moved on Shabbos, even though there's nothing wrong with it intrinsically. This is a picture hanging on the wall. That's a possibility. I'll get to it in a little bit later, we'll get to that case. We have so far two major categories of muktzah. The first muktzah nachmas gufo, intrinsic muktzah, things which are not food or persons or utensils, things which are sticks and stones and dirt, eggshells and nutshells, things like that, have no use whatsoever. That's called muktzeh machlus gufo. And then there's a second category of muktzeh machlus nisaron kis, second category, which means something whose use is prohibited on Shabbos because it's very expensive, it wouldn't be used for anything else but. Those are the two major categories of muktzeh that exist. Now we go to two more complex categories. One is not real muktzeh. Real muktzeh, we know, cannot be moved, period. Although we shall see perhaps tricky ways how to get out of it. But in an ordinary fashion, may not be moved. Something which is called kli shemelachto li'isur, which means a utensil's primary use, not exclusive use, but its primary use, is prohibited on Shabbos. A kli shemelachto li'isur, although it has a primary use which is prohibited, may be moved, catch this now, for one of two reasons. Letzorech gufo or letzorech makomo, which means because you want to use it, for its permissible use, of course, or because you need its place. It's in the way. And because it's in the way, you want to get rid of it, get it to a different place. The Gemara tells us, it's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, the Kli Shemalach of the Isser, although it's somewhat moved, so it may not be moved indiscriminately, but it may be moved the Tzorah Gufo, to use it actually, or the Tzorah Makoma, because it's in the way. What's an example? The Klisha Malach Kol Yisr, so the Post community say, a pen. A pen is used primarily for writing, but if you use it for other things, a pen is used for move things, point to things, all kinds of situations. Something like scissors. A pot, which is used primarily for cooking, but also sometimes for storing. That's called kli shemelach kol yisur. Referring to a case where the primary use still, as I said before, is the prohibited action. Before going into the details of this category, let's mention the fourth and final one for our purposes. There are a few others which are a bit more remote. And that is something which is called a basis nedavar ha'asur, a basis for a prohibited, a base actually, for a prohibited item. The base takes on the halacha of the item on top of it. Muktzeh, the base is also muktzeh. So just to review before going into details, now we have a total of four categories of muktzeh. Yes. And I think there was almost, maybe with rare exception, whatever we'll be discussing, this is one of these four. It's worth knowing the four by heart. What are the four? Leave out the word muktzeh, so we'll make it easier. First is machmas gufo. Second is machmas besar kis. The third is kli shemelach kol yisur. And the fourth is Bostas the Dover also. So you see, each category has three words or less. Not so bad. One of them only has two. So you see, in 11 easy words, you can memorize all the four categories of books. Not so bad. Now, halacha, of course, are a bit more complex. So let's discuss Kli Shemelach Kol Yisur, since we were discussing that before. There's some complexities. What's called the Tzorah Gufo, what's called the Tzorah Makoma. The Tzorah Gufo is pretty clear. For example, you have a hammer. A hammer is used primarily for knocking nails into the wall, which is of course a prohibited action on Shabbos. But it could also be used to crack nuts. You know, I'm a nut cracker. You take a hammer, go. It's mutter, pick up the hammer to go crack the nuts. Thank you. Well, if you have a nutcracker and you have a hammer, may you use the hammer or should you use that for a nutcracker? Some machlokes. Some say it's mutter is mutter. What's wrong with a hammer? Others say it's a matter because you have no alternative. But if you have a nutcracker, it's better to use a nutcracker. It's an issue, a matter of dispute. What's called a tzorach makomo for its place? You left your hammer or on the table. Huh? They want to set the table for Shabbos. There's a hammer in the way. So you're permitted to pick the hammer up and get it off the table. Once you pick up the hammer to get it off the table, or you pick up the hammer to crack a nut, once it's still, as long as it's still in your hand, you may take it to its final destination, which is probably the closet somewhere, or some food chest. You also drop it like a hot potato as soon as you finish getting it off the Shabbos table. Once it's permissible, once it's thought in a permissible fashion, then you may continue to move it. The question, if you stop in your place, are you allowed to go on? It has to do with the other half, please. Run around. Some say that you're in it for the prohibition of muktzah, because you may have to carry things. So once you're already moving it, so then you're moving it permissibly, so you can keep on moving it. If you stop it, start all over again, it makes it worse for carrying, and maybe it makes it worse for muktzah too. Perhaps. The big dispute, what happens if you don't need its place? It just bothers you. It bothers you and you can't stand it. You left a hammer on the coffee table. Fancy, super fancy coffee table. You're serving it as your guest tea. And you have this fancy tea set with this beautiful silver pitcher and china cups and gorgeous saucers and gold spoons and platinum cake. Platter, and it's a hammer there. Imagine that. I work so, I spent so much money, I worked so hard to impress my company, it's a hammer there. Burnish a little. Is that permissible to move or not? And the Shmiras Shabbos on top says, awesome. This is chapter 20, paragraph 10. On the bottom, says, well, maybe it's okay. Who's the bottom? The same author. But usually most of the chumras are on top of the kulam on the bottom, usually. So, you know, the top is for people, anyone can read the top. The bottom is, that's to be learned. We'll learn it through the bottom. The figures, and of course the English translation, only the top. The bottom is left out completely. You get a more strict version in English and in Hebrew, which is usually that way. Yes. Rabbi Neuber, Shalita. That we're all Talmid Rav Shlomo Zalman Shatzal because we are Talmid Rav Shmir Shabbos. Every page of Rav Shlomo Zalman quoted 2, 3, 4, 5, 8 times. As a matter of fact, I think I mentioned to you Rav Shlomo Zalman that I wrote a third Shmir Shabbos. No one even knows about this one. The second one we did last year at the beginning, last term at the beginning about Kiddush and Abdullah. It's a tiny little third one just came out just a year and a half ago. So the Zama went over all the hundreds and thousands of times he's quoted in the safe, and he wrote a few, 70-80 pages of comments. Changed his mind, he wanted to add something, subtract something, modify something. Now this is a very important thing. What you may not do for Klish of Lachal Yisr, really may not do, is to move it for purposes of preserving it. For example, you left your hammer in the backyard before Shabbos. Now you're afraid it's going to either be stolen, or you're afraid it'll get rusty because of the rain forecast. You may not move it inside because you don't need it right now. Now, can you fabricate a use? left your hammer outside. So you say, oh, I'd like to have some walnuts. All of a sudden, you guys are catching for walnuts. And my wife had ate a walnut. So I'm going to bring the hammer in and crack the walnut and put it down. Is this trick permissible or not? Some say yes, some say no. It's a matter of dispute, once again. Some say yes, some say no. Mr. Brewer seems to permit this. Now, Shulchan Aruch says that tefillin are considered to be in the category of Kli Shemalach L'Yisrael. Now, I'm not suggesting you should wear tefillah, we discussed this in our last week, the other class. But you know, you may have a brother wear tefillah, or a father wear tefillah, maybe what you want your son to wear tefillah, and they'll be lying around on Shabbos. What do you do with it? So according to the Shulchan Aruch, for the Kli Shemalach L'Yisrael, it's made to be worn on Shabbos, you may not do. And therefore can be moved with Tzara Gufo Mekomo. Very little Tzara Gufo these days, but the Tzara Mekomo is very prevalent. To forget the tefillin on the table, the Shabbos table, and the chair. Happens in shul all the time. The Kohen says to Shulchan Aruch is permissible. However, the Shemir Shabbos in the bottom asks a very strong question. How come you don't consider tefillin to be a what? Mokta, Machmas, Kassara, and Kish, still costs fortunes of money. Fortunes. You would use it for anything else. So I thought it really is prohibited. I thought it really is. It probably should be considered a cliche, a book to not to start a kiss. What about the Shulchan Aruch? Well, in those days there are more than the Shulchan Aruch. It wasn't so clear that you're not permitted to wear tefillin. The Gemara says you're not required to wear tefillin. But there's really no clear absolute prohibition about wearing tefillin. So obvious. And therefore, it wouldn't be so bad. Or maybe tefillin weren't so expensive in those days. Today, a fortune. An interesting example of a Kli Shemalach L'Yisrael, a telephone book. Interesting. Of course, from Shlomo Zalman, that's out. That the main purpose of the telephone book is to look up telephone numbers. We all know that the secondary use of a telephone book to look up what? Addresses. You want to go to find someone's house. So therefore, it's called and you can use it to find an address which people often use in Shabbos. All right. Any questions so far? If you have, it's a good time to ask. Yes, sir. Cookbook? Cookbook. What kind of permissible use is there for a cookbook? Salad. Okay, if there's something in the cookbook that you don't have to cook, then it would be okay because that use is a permissible use on Shabbos. That's right, so we wouldn't need to look it up, perhaps you have to make the salad. Although that's permissible itself. Okay. We started mentioning before about the picture, which is first the Yakei Moko, a person puts it in one place all the time. The Chazon Ish says that a picture which is kept in one place all the time is in the category of muktzah. It's very relevant. A person may brush against it and sort of tilt it. So you wouldn't be able to move it back in a normal fashion because it has the status of muktzah called the Chazon Ish. Even though there's nothing intrinsically prohibited about a picture. The fact that it's miyaked or mokom, that it has a specific place, according to this opinion, we have a status of muktzah. What kind of muktzah? These muktzah are not chesor and kis. What means chesor and kis? Not so expensive. The answer is that chesor and kis, according to the Chazon Ish, doesn't mean chesor and kis. Chesor and kis means that it's something which you ordinarily don't move. And if you ordinarily don't move it for some different reason, such as you just don't move it, it hangs in one place forever and ever, they don't have a similar halachic status with the chesaron kis. Yes? In my opinion, tefillin should be prohibited as the chesaron kis. So why did the Shulchan Aruch say so? The Shulchan Aruch doesn't say, it's because this is kli shemalach to the yisr. Maybe the Shulchan Aruch felt that tefillin can be used in certain cases. You look at the Gemara, there were certain unusual circumstances when you could wear tefillin on Shabbos. Protect yourself, or protect it, or whatever it may be. But today we never do it, we consider it prohibited. Absolutely never. Worse than that, the last lizard, the Shulchan Aruch called them a last lizard. I thought that maybe you should have a status of the surrogate. If you ask me, it's not so simple. Could have a status of the surrogate. Now we shall see soon that even so, there's still a chance. Don't give up. Don't give up. Have hope. We'll explain as we go. There's still hope, even if I'm right. Now, let's say you have a chesaron kis situation and you want to render it permissible to be used on Shabbos. How do you do that? You have to make a mental decision before Shabbos. Henceforth, it will be something which will use even for other permissible uses. I'll give an interesting example. You have a stamp. Stamps are only used for mail letters. That's it. Sorry, kids. There's no other use for it. Somebody makes a decision on Friday to use it for a stamp collection. A stamp is just a hobby. It's a kind of a utensil, sort of, a belief, maybe. Which is you move back and forth, you know, it's this, that. Maybe it's halakhic status. It would change. That's a rarity. More common is the case of muktzah machmas gufo. It's intrinsic muktzah, which you would like to have its status changed from before Shabbos. And here we have an interesting halacha. If I decide to set it aside for permanent use, then it suffices to have what's called yichud b'machshava. I designate it in my mind that this item, which until now was considered junk, dirt, sticks, and stones, from now on I plan to use this permanently, indefinitely, as a kli. I have a rock. I see people do this. They have a big rock. They make it as a way to hold the door open. This rock was Kodesh Kedoshim. I don't want to throw it anymore. This rock should be used indefinitely. It's a nice size rock, the right weight, the right size, the right shape. And it's going to be kept there to keep the door open and closed. So then if I make that mental decision, that the status of Muktzah Machmas Gufo is lost, it's not considered to be a kind of a kli. Albeit a rather primitive one, it's still considered to be a clue. about a one-time use. Not so simple. One-time use, then it depends, really. If it's something which is only used once, that's the nature of it, then your designation for one-time use would suffice. It only has one use. One time. If it's something which is used permanently, say a rock. A rock has, there's one time use for a rock. And I decide to use the rock only for this Shabbos. Why? I want to throw it in a car passing by a Shabbos. Yell out, Shabbos! So it seems that that would be a violation of books, as well as many other potential violations. But it would also be books, because you can't designate it for permanent use. Once you throw the rock, you never see that rock again. And I don't think it would help the designation. Sand is muktzah. It's not a food, it's not a person, it's not a utensil. The sand which is put into a sandbox so that kids can play there is not muktzah. It's designated indefinitely to be used as a kind of a plaything. It's designated for before Shabbos. Question now becomes, what about, you have flowers. Flowers that are in a flower pot. In the flower pot, in dirt in the flower pot. Another word for flower pot? Land. Land. We're now consulting for the first time the books of books. Right? Whoops. I don't understand this one. Any type of plant may not be moved on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Source? You heard it from Moshe Feinstein. A pretty good source. Now, I'm not sure what he means. Does he mean that the dirt in the plant, in the flower pot is considered to be moved on? Is that what he's driving at? I guess.
Yep, but I've also heard that for just flowers in a vase.
Oh.
With water.
I'm looking up that. That's the next thing I'm looking up. Flowers. Doesn't have flowers. Look at this stuff. How else do you write flowers? Vase. Alright. Doesn't have vase either. Come on, help me out. What else? How about I look up the flowers? Roses. Roses. You have to understand how long this index is. He has pages for pages, 12 pages a minute, you can't find flowers. Don't know. Cut flowers. Rest fire. Get fresh vegetables. Fresh flowers. I don't know. So I thought flowers are permissible. And as far as the land, I thought it was prohibited because of the dirt. That's what the Rosh apparently, but I'm not exactly sure. Why don't we say that since this dirt is miyuchad, this dirt is put in this land indefinitely. It's supposed to be there as some kind of part of decorative piece, indefinitely. Why is that inferior to the sandbox? The sandbox is not looked, so why is the plant looked? That's my question. Don't know. Yes.
Wait, I don't understand the problem. In the sandbox it's not mukta.
Right.
And in the flower pot it is? Yes.
I can't find him out of here. I thought that the Sefer Shmir Shabbos said that flowers in a vase are okay. Flowers in a flower pot are not okay. That's my recollection. I can't find an index anything.
But isn't there a
grammar
also?
That's much, much worse.
No, but if
it's
in a pot, it's the same thing as
filling
the grammar.
In some case. Thank you very much. You just reminded me of the magic word. It's called utzit. That's the word. Utzit. 1 minute. Still too low. Aha! Eureka. Not in the chapter on books. He has a separate chapter about growing things. And he writes over there that an utzit, even if there's no hole in it, and therefore it's considered to be unconnected to the ground, it is muksa. Wait. But on the bottom he says, it's not muksa. 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. Then he says, some are not sure if it's muksa. So some say it is, some say it's not, some say we're not sure. Flower power. Well, you know, you have to see all kinds of problems moving flower pots, maybe considered disconnected from the ground, even though it's not really part of the ground. Just don't move flower pots, finish. For whatever reason. But I believe that simple, plain, regular flowers, not found in dirt, found in a vase of water, that should be okay. That should also be okay. Touching the flowers? One second. Oh! I found it. Another word. I learned a new word now. I learned how to pronounce it. Aleph, Gimel, Reish, Tes, Lamed. Agar Tal. Anybody from Israel here? No? Never heard of it? It means a vase. If you don't believe me, look up the Shemir Shabbos in English, 26-25. I'm pretty sure it means a vase. It talks about having it from him on Fe'il Anot. It's not muksa, you may move it. But the parach is not muksa, the water is not muksa. Oh, there it is. I told you I could send it along. See, it's coming to me while I find this thing. He distinguishes between a vase, which is not muksa, but the water. You move the plant, the flower, you move the vase, you move the water, where the plant is muksa. Why? So I understood, it's not sure. Some say it's muksa. I understood those who say it's muksa because of why? Because of the dirt. So what occurred to me was, why isn't the dirt considered like the sandbox? You have to look at all the sources he quotes over here in the 26th chapter, the 5th footnote, which I don't have in front of me. Some say muksa, some say muksa, not sure. So I have to go into it. But it's better not to move it because you never know what's going to happen. Post there. Yes?
Okay, this is what I was saying before. The flower pot, Okay, the sand in the sandbox is meant for, it has purpose of say or pleasure, and therefore it's there indefinitely, and therefore it's not moved. The pot, and it's meant to be moved around all the time. The dirt in the flower pot is there to stay there, also indefinitely. It's not meant for anything. It has one purpose, and that purpose.
Changing water is a different problem. Nothing to do with books. Shouldn't change the water. Okay. Let's now tackle a very difficult topic. You ready for it? No, not yet? Yeah, more questions? Yeah, sure. We're not even up to that yet. You're right. Get the fifth category of books. See, I'm ready for exit. The fifth category of books. Called NOLA. Very good. See? Left, I haven't gotten to that yet. But we'll come to it. But now we're on category number 4. Called Bosses the Dover Osur. Very important category. Very important category. Bosses l'davar also means it's a base for a prohibited item. Then in itself, the base itself acquires the status of mukta, and you're not permitted to move it even if the original item which made it mukta is no longer on top of the base. You may ask, how did it move? An angel came, Gabriel, how did it move? Well, maybe a goy removed it, or a kid removed it, or it fell down, or a person did it accidentally, but it's no longer there. It's one of the intrinsic books which may not be moved for any reason. Okay, so there are quite a number of prerequisites, of conditions, which are necessary for the status of buses to become to take effect. Not every single time that an item of mukta is found on a base, the base becomes mukta. There are many, many conditions. If the conditions are not fulfilled, then the base is not considered to be mukta. You say, so what? Still can't move the thing on top? Well, be patient. Come to that a little later. So how many conditions are there? The Shmirah Shabbos rattles off in a row. 7 conditions. Wow. 7 conditions. If you have all 7 conditions, then the base is prohibited. So if you lack any one of them, then ask. Condition number 1. The item of mukta was put on the base by the owner of the base or someone who has permission to put it on the base. Even an issue, what about other members of the household? If officially the base belongs to the balabayis, let's say his children, his wife, someone else put something on the base, so it's a dispute. What does this fit in this category? Generally speaking though, if someone does it for the benefit of the balabayis, even if he doesn't know about it, he doesn't agree to it originally, but he certainly would wish it, then it would have a status of a bus. Again, either he put it there himself, or he knows about it being agreed, should be put there. But we know for a fact, even though he doesn't know about it, he would be happy that it be put there. That's condition number one. Condition number two, the only time it becomes a bus is if the mukta item was put there with the intention that it be there. Put on the base with the intention that it be on the base. Or that is the regular position, if you will, of the mukta item. But just sort of fell on the base. He doesn't even realize he put it on the base. He just sort of put it down somewhere. If it happens to find itself on that base, no. It's not of a status of buses. Let me give you the logic behind all these things. If only considered a bus as another also, there's a strong relationship established between the base and the item itself. And here's the older corrections have to do with that. In other words, one, the other way around, if the mukta item serves the base, example, someone puts a rock on a pot cover so that the cat shouldn't come and knock it out. No. Or he put it on. Papers of the pot. What if neither serves the other? That's not so simple. You contrast two completely opposite cases, where the base serves the book, so the book serves the base. In one case, where the base of the book is the boss, the other way around. It's not. What if neither serves the other? You put something in a drawer because papers of the park. But neither serves the other. That's not so simple. You contrast two completely opposite cases, where the base serves the book, so the book serves the base. In one case, where the base of the book is the boss, still the way around. Now, what if neither serves the other? You put something in a drawer, because you put something, let's say, in a drawer, on top of a handkerchief. Not going to be washed, it should be on top of that. There's no space. The drawer's packed to the gills. There's nowhere to put it. You put it on top of the handkerchief. If the handkerchief treated the bust as of her also, then it's dispute. Some say yes, and some say no. Okay, so it's all part of category number three. That the real buses is where the base serves the Volkseider. The other way around, there's certainly no dinner buses. If it's neutral, then it's a question. Condition number four. It's only considered to be a buses if you put the item there before Shabbos, intending that it should remain there for the entire period known as Bein Hashmosho, the twilight zone. And Hashmosho is the time between sunset and when the stars come out. If, let's say a half an hour or so after sunset. In Eretz Yisrael, it is 15, 20 minutes. It's not a contradiction. Here it takes longer for the sun to, for the spring to get dark. But if you put it on the base on Friday and intended to remove it before Shabbos, well, you play your thumb left it there. And then you forgot to remove it before Shabbos. Or if in fact it was removed during Bein HaShemoshes, let's say by a non-Jew, or if it was placed somehow on Shabbos itself, on top of the base. Let's say by a gut. Or if he himself mistakenly put it there on Shabbos. In all those cases, it is not considered a bustis of Dover HaHos. But once again, in all those cases, the item was not put there with the intention to be there for Bein HaShemoshes, or in some cases it wasn't there Bein HaShemoshes. Bein HaShemoshes is the critical moment for Hilchos Muktzeh. That was considered, that's how we assume, that's a pivotal time in the determination of what's called Muktzeh or not. And there is even a view which maintains, and one may rely upon this view in a very difficult circumstance, that it's not considered to be a bust unless you put it there on the base with the intention that it should remain there the entire Shabbos, not just Bein HaShemoshes. It's a dispute. So far, four conditions. Condition number five. The mukta item must have significance. Even though we call in English garnish, this is just a nothing, a zero. Nothing, a penny. A penny falls on the table. Then, does not render the table to be a book. You have the same idea. All this leads to the same direction. We view the base as somehow serving and being secondary to the mukta item. It needs to be for a certain amount of time, it should have a certain value, it should be put by that particular person. All these conditions are really leading in the same logical direction. Number six. It's only a basis if the item serves as a base for a mukta item exclusively. The base serves as a base for the mukta item exclusively. But if the basis l'davar ha'asur u'l'davar ha'mutter, there are things which are permitted, permissible as well as things that are prohibited. And the permissible item is considered to be more important. Then there's no status of us. How do you define important? That's a very good question. So my opinion is to give a very quick definition of importance. Importance means as follows. If someone comes to you at that moment and says to you, listen, I'm taking one of these two things. Which one should I take? Which one do you want me to leave to you? You make a decision based on the numerous factors. If your decision at that time, presumably the Ben HaShemoshah time, probably the determinant factor. If at that time you would want to keep the mukta and give up the other item, then it's called a basis. If at that time you'd rather keep the other item and give up the mukta, then it's not called a basis. That's a general rule. Now presumably the item should, let's infer okay, to okay, but all the items are on there before Shabbos. For that case, for the moment. Obviously, the most important example of this is if you have candles on the table and you have challahs on the table. Famous battle between the candles and the challahs. Who wins? What's considered to be more important? Pockets and clothing, and that's a to come to the details of Yuga. Okay, so let's review if I can memorize myself. What are the seven conditions? I'll never remember. What are the seven conditions? What are the seven conditions? Has to be what? Put there by the owner of the base or someone who's doing it on his behalf or his benefit. That's condition number one. Condition number two, what? With the intention to be there on the base. Suppose it sort of fell down over there. Right, so this is condition number three, has to be the Ben Hashmash, is that right? No? Oh yes, sorry. If the base serves the mukta, the other way around not, and if neither serves the other, it's a question. Four Ben Hashmashes? If you intended to be the Ben Hashmashes, you didn't just forget it there, you didn't want to put it in the middle of Ben Hashmashes, you wasn't taken off in the middle of Ben Hashmashes. Okay. That's four. And you mentioned, I think, in that context, that the Shazaf Kak, if it's necessary, you can rely on the view that says that it's only a bus that was put there originally before Shabbos with the intention of being there for the entire Shabbos, as opposed to the intention of being someone knocked off in the middle of Shabbos. That's number four. Number five has to be worth something, right? As opposed to a penny? If it's a penny, it's a garnish, there's no value whatsoever. Number six has to be bus of the Davar Asur exclusively, or Asur which is more important than Mutter. But if the Mutter thing is more important than the Asur thing, it's not called the buses. And number seven has to be that the main part of the base serves as the base. So it's not only the secondary part of the base serves as the base. The secondary part is Mutter, but the whole base. Now, here's the drawer. See? Put the Mutter in the drawer. So it's very possible, see the detail, that the drawer would be a buses, but the entire desk would not be a buses. Not in the desk, it's in the drawer. Okay? Okay, these are the seven conditions. So it's not so easy to make it something into a buses. Not so hard either. There's not insurmountable hurdles here. Okay, you got it straight, everybody? That's not the Shemir Shabbos. Give you a number of examples over here. Let's talk about candlesticks. That's the most important thing of all. Candlesticks. The candlesticks are on the table before Shabbos. The table becomes a bus. Let's say you want to obviate the status of bus. What do? You put on a challah before Shabbos. Everyone knows the custom, and you don't know about it. In some homes, it's the custom to put the challah on before the candlesticks. Well, I'll tell you, in my house, we don't put the candlestick on the table at all. This is only because of danger. When we first married, of course, all the beautiful candlesticks on the table, da 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 da. So the children started turning it over on Shabbos. Once, twice, they thought, oh, no. It's too dangerous. And now they're up on a little break front on the side of the roof. You know, the children have grown, but somehow the candlesticks remain in the same place. Safe there. Our table shakes sometimes, you know, it's better up there, safe. We don't have these oak tables, you know, these. And this, our table, the legs are sort of falling in, and there's a corner where the table shakes all the time, and I'm afraid it would have to be knocked over, to fall over by itself. So it remains there. But in the old traditional way, there was custom to put the challahs on the table before you put the candles on the table, for this reason. Main question. Must the challah be more important than the candles, or must the challah be more important than the candlesticks? Obviously, it seems to be that's a crucial, critical point. It seems, as we mentioned before, that challahs might be viewed as more important than candles, especially if they have electricity. No way! more important than candlesticks. Collars cost $2, and candlesticks cost $200, or maybe even $2,000 for the kind of candlesticks you have. And therefore, you'd rather if someone came to you and said, give me one of those items, I'm taking one of them away from you, I would say, take the collars, at least a couple of boxes, I'll go to my next door neighbor, and leave me the candlesticks. So which one is it? Here, Shlomo Zalman Zatzal is quoted as saying, well, maybe, just maybe, we should no longer view the candlesticks as merely secondary to the candles, which would then give them a status, an independent status of muktzah as something which is used for candles, which would have an independent muktzah status. Maybe no. Maybe candlesticks today are considered decorative pieces. It's like furniture. A beautiful piece of furniture. So a beautiful piece of furniture is not intrinsic in muktzah. And if that's the case, it's only muktzah because of its being secondary to the candles. Aha! But if that's the case, it would be sufficient that the challahs are more important than the candles, not the candlesticks. Which of Shlomo Zalman are about the Zechatah of the Rocha, that's his story, his logical point. Let's say you want to move your candlesticks on Shabbos. It's a very important point. Why do you want to move it on Shabbos? Let's say Friday night, you want the beautiful candles, the glow, the halo, the beauty, the splendor, the romance of the candles to be on the Shabbos table. But after it goes out, it's just in the way. Maybe you want to change the tablecloth on Shabbos morning or for Shabbos Shudas, the milchiks on the end, it's just in the way. What are you going to do? You can't move it. Even if it's not intrinsically muktzah, but it's a basis for the davar ha'asur, right? It's the candles are a base for the candles. They serve the candles, the whole shebang. So what do you do? The Shemir Shabbos writes that maybe you can put the candlesticks on a tray. Most people, I think, please, let's take a poll. In your house, are the candlesticks on a tray, or are they directly on the... Who has it on the tray? Raise your hand. There it is. In the old days, they put it straight on the table. Now it's always with a tray, and it is... So he writes on the end of the footnote that if you put the muktzah on the tray, and the tray would be considered to be a basis for the davar ha'asur, then it would only, he's talking about a somewhat different case. That you'd be, it would be sufficient that the challahs be more important than the candles. Don't worry about the tray. And you don't worry about the candlesticks either, if the candlesticks are considered ornamental, are considered decorative. Now the question becomes, well then can you move the tray? So if I may skip this for a minute, since he's thought about that topic. He writes, you put something important for Shabbos on the tray, let's say a challah. On the tray, then you can move the tray on Shabbos. If you need the place for the tray, you want to change the tablecloth, or things of this nature. Wow, that's a good question. One second. Let's assume that the thing was on before Shabbos. That would be, I believe, critical. Hello. What else? Look at the start. Hello. I have a simple question. What about a simple thing like a sitter or a salt shaker? Things of this nature. Of course, the question becomes: are they more important than the candles? Kiddush wine, that's right. Wine. It's always a problem which bothers my mind in these kinds of cases. And that is, if you have a ready substitute, you put a sitter there, it's a big deal. You can finally have 10 of the sitter over the drawer. Before the salt shaker is in the pantry, and you have another bottle of wine in the refrigerator. Yeah, so that's what I don't even know. That's my question, why I'm not so sure this works. Use it. You just have to put it in before Shabbos. And then you, and you can use it, you can use it on Shabbos and put it back on the tray. And now the tray continues to be a base for this item. Perhaps, whether that's necessary, one second. This is true, by the way, he says, only in the case in which the tray is not made especially for candles. If it's made especially for candles, it's not a special Shabbos something. Then it has a stronger relationship with the candle than anything else. He doesn't discuss that issue, which is quite a question. Let's talk about it over here. But yeah, my own concerns, what I told you before, he quotes it from Shlomo Zalman, that the Tzadik L'Vracha, that Yayin and Kiddush is considered more important. Look at this nature. I'm only wondering, what if he has other wine? Now he has no other candles, of course he has other, he has electric light, but the candle has a special ambiance that it, supposedly it adds. And he has no other substitute for that. But I'm not so happy with this trick. Maintains the Shmir Shabbos that even if you remove the challah, for example, the wine, and now all you're left with is the candlesticks, it's still not considered to be in the category of a buses. Why? Because Ben Hashmashos, it was not a buses. Ben Hashmashos was challah there as well. One second. But others disagree. Sure enough. And therefore it's better to put it back on or leave it on the whole time. This all for me from the Shmirah Shabbos. Now we're going to take a peek in the other book, the Mukta book. He says about all this. These are very important questions. Okay, let's take a look here. Yes. Because then since the challah is more important than the candles, so then it's condition number six is not fulfilled. Right? So how many will the candles prefer? Very good. The answer is, I don't want to go ahead of myself, but you're forcing me to, I don't mind. You are moving the candles indirectly. It's called tiltul min hatzad. But it gets to that a little bit later. That's permissible under certain conditions. Candles, Mr. Trail. Here we go, what did he say? Da-da. Here we go. Candlesticks. There's a whole chapter about candlesticks. Chapter 17. That's good, because candlesticks are very, very important on chapters. I'm glad he has devoted the entire chapter to it. Yes?
If we were saying before how you can, if someone would consider the candlesticks as a decorative item as a furniture, so they would only be muksa because of the candles.
Correct.
Couldn't they be a buses because the candles are resting in there? So then would the tray also be a buses? Because
but it's enough to knock out, if the challah can knock out the candles.
I'm not saying that, but I'm saying then there's like a double buses. If a buses is on top of another bus,
right.
You could make it.
You
okay.
Got triple buses.
I just didn't know.
But as long as the mutter item knocks out the very top guy, then...
I just didn't know if you could have two buses on the top of the bus.
Okay. He calls it a minhag of putting challis on the table before the candlesticks. Mishnah Berurah says minhag nachon. They should be able to move the table. Whoops. Some authorities maintain that it only works if you plan to leave the challis there for the entire Shabbos.
So then it doesn't matter if you have more in the fridge, because you would use the ones in the fridge. Obviously, if you were leaving the other ones there all Shabbos,
yeah,
you're not using
that's
them.
That's what he says. Wow. 1 minute. Now. What about the tray? Whoopee. He claims that a tray is made primarily for candlesticks. Is that true? Is it made for
Well, yes, some are. No, not. You get to see.
No, so of course it's special for that. If it's not special for that, I would have said it's permissible. He doesn't say that. He quotes it in the back. 1 minute. In the back he has Shubas, two Gedorle Olam, Rav Moshe, Zatzal, Rav Shlomo Zalman Zatzal, Zecha Tzadik of the Rocha. He quotes over here. He asked him about the silver tray. It's okay. Let's put all other things on the tray. That's what comes from Amazon, and against your emotion. So again, my only problem is what I told you before. I recall that somebody else says what I'm saying over here. I don't know right now where it is. That since you can do most things you put on, you can do without. You have a substitute challah, a substitute cider, a substitute salt shaker, a substitute wine. But then it's not so simple that these things are more important to you than a candle. If you have no other challah, that's it. You're just down to this. You can't fit a whole big challah in those trays. You can put a challah roll. You do it as a challah. You have a matzah. You need a challah roll. Shabbos shuddah or something. That's what bothers me about this heaven. Even if the Sumer Shlomo Zalman is right, I still am not so excited about that for that reason. But right now, I can't remember someone else besides me says this. I think someone else does this. Don't see it this minute. Yes?
And what you said about a tray being used for other things, but if you have a nice silver tray, most people put some kind of an insert inside the tray to keep the tray from getting ruined with the candles.
Oh, yeah? I don't. I mean, my wife does. We have a tray and put candles on it.
Yeah.
All right. So that makes it better or worse. I don't know. I'm not sure. Okay. So he has a whole discussion here about this matter. He's not so excited about it. Once we're speaking about candles, things of this nature, I happen to see in this particular chapter 17, he talks about electric lights. Are electric lights muktzah or not? Electric lamp. So he quotes Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman, who both said that an electric light is muktzah, same as a candle. This is only in case of but the main item is the electric light. You have an electric indicator light on an urn or on something else of this nature. That's considered only secondary to the light to the appliance. Therefore, if you move the appliance, it's called a tzara gufa v'komo. It's only called a klisha malacholias. It's not intrinsic muksa. I'm not even convinced for sure that an electric light is considered intrinsic muksa. Because Rav Moshe, the Bani writes, is not even sure himself. I'll tell you why. I'll ask you another question. Why is a candle muksa? Candle serves a function. But of course, a klisha malacholias, so that we know for sure. But why is it considered a complete and absolute muksa? But the answer was, because that little flame is not a person, it's not a food, it's not a kli. Maybe the candle's a thing, that's a little flame. But then I was wondering, maybe when it comes to an electric bulb, the filament is considered to be a kli, and even the flame, as almost surrounded by the glass bulb, might also have a status of a kli, I was thinking. As opposed to an open flame, if you will, of a candle. Now, I'm not so sure it has a full status of absolute muksa. Rav Moshe Kahn also was not exactly sure, as quoted in his last footnote in chapter 17 about candlesticks and the like. Okay, so the tray trick is not so excited. It's for different reasons. Rav Moshe didn't like it because he thought the tray was considered secondary, because the candle's only made for that purpose. Now I'm not convinced, because I have this gnawing doubt about what's considered more important even than the candles, than the candlesticks. I think that someone said what I said, but right now I can't place it. Okay. Now we go back, yes? Okay. All right. Then Rav Moshe's point might go by the board. Maybe. Let's continue. I have a drawer in a table or desk. What's the scoop? What happens? There are two kinds of drawers. I'm not going to try with this one. I know what's going to happen. Some pull out, some don't pull out. You know what I'm saying? Because sometimes you can just pull the drawer all the way out. It doesn't come out. Well, let's assume it doesn't come out. Doesn't come out? Okay? Doesn't come out. It's one kind of drawer. Other kinds of drawers will come out, as we know. So the drawer certainly will to do something there. What about the table itself? The desk itself?
Drawers
and boxes and drawers. Let's say I have a drawer. All that's in there is money. I have a money drawer. I put all my money there, my bills and my coins and my tokens and all my loot. Right? That drawer is considered muksa. What about the entire table, the entire dresser? No. Just that drawer. Question, what about the table itself? What's the story? So there are two kinds of drawers. So he writes here in the Sefer Shemira Shabbos that if the drawer cannot be removed from the table, then we view the drawer as a secondary part of the table. As we mentioned earlier, condition number 7, I believe, for the secondary part of an item, the entire item does not become a bus. However, if the drawer is removable, then it's considered to be an independent kli, and as a result, even the table is in danger. Now the table is considered to be a base for the entire drawer, which is considered independently. It's an independent kli which is sort of on or being supported by the table. And now I have to measure what else the table supports. If the table has only one drawer, there's some desk or table that has only one drawer, and he's drawing all your loot there, all your money is in there, and there's nothing else on the table. When shoppers come in, it's an empty table. Then, if the drawer is removable, the drawer is considered an independent utensil which is completely bosses. And then the table is considered a bosses of the bosses. And therefore, in any of the drawer, so the entire table becomes prohibited to move to the bosses. So, it's better, he writes. It's better to remove the car keys in before Shabbos. It's okay. The light goes off of the trunk. But usually most cars have two keys, an engine key and a door key. Even the door key is okay, the engine key is no good. Thank you. $4. What am I going to do? I'm going to get